WHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. It was a rough start, but Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has officially announced he is running for president.
It was supposed to be an unconventional announcement using Twitter Spaces with owner Elon Musk, but much of the early stream was unlistenable.
All right, great. So let's see. Crash
it did repeatedly, but when the stream finally kicked in about 20 minutes late, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis made it official.
I am running for president of the United States to lead our great American comeback.
His campaign starts with a reported $200 million war chest, but he's hardly the front runner, with former President Donald Trump leading several polls. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Uvalde is mourning today, 1 year after 19 students and two teachers were killed. Reporter Chris Fox is there.
Butterflies were released at 11:32 a.m. That was the time the gunman opened fire inside of Robb Elementary a year ago. 77 minutes later, the bells tolled at St. Philip's Episcopal Church, marking how long it took law enforcement to breach the classroom. Marion Sokol with the Children's Bereavement Center has been working with the survivors over the past year.
There's anger because of not knowing what happened during those 77 minutes, how long their children suffered.
Still no investigative reports from the Texas Rangers or the city of Uvalde.
A scary warning for schools.
A year after the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, that killed 21 students and teachers, senior Homeland Security officials say they can't point to any dramatic change in school safety. The Department of Homeland Security has issued a terrorism bulletin warning that schools remain at risk of extremist violence.
That's CBS's Nicole Skanga. Music icon Tina Turner died today at 83. Anthony DeCurtis is with Rolling Stone.
She's an artist who is as significant symbolically as she is artistically. You know, she became an important figure, particularly for women, because of the resilience that she showed.
The Queen of Rock's career spans 60 years. President Biden has chosen Air Force General C.Q. Brown to serve as the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. If approved, he'd be the second black man to hold that position after Colin Powell, who was appointed in 1989. And congressional leaders have about a week left to hash out a debt deal. Louisiana Republican Garrett Graves.
You can start counting the days, and I mean, there's no question that we're getting to crunch time.
The House will go on recess tomorrow as planned, but members will be notified within 24 hours if there's a deal. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
You've decided to expand your family with a furry friend, so what's next? Do you have enough space? What are the right foods? Get the answers to these questions and more at WFHR's Petpalooza on the Southwood County Humane Society grounds, June 11th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Local pet experts will be on hand to answer all your questions, and the Humane Society will be open to discuss the adoption process. All this plus live music, food trucks, and food and direct sales vendors. It's a real petcation, June 11th from 10 to 4 for WFHR's Petpalooza.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil.
As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat and silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies expected tonight with lows around 37. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lots of sunshine tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 68. Lows dip down to about 37 tomorrow night. Low 70s Friday, turning warmer on Saturday with highs in the mid-70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 61.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
That's what we like to do on this show. Find the comedy gold. I just like
non-fungible as a word.
It is a good word.
It's a wonderful, it just has a good mouth feel.
La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. Hey, Jane, remember a couple like months ago when we were talking about how Wisconsin's on the brink of a constitutional crisis because of our public defenders and district attorney shortage?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. 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 So maybe we're actually going to do something about it.
Oh, stop teasing me.
Well, at least the first step was earlier this month, about a month ish ago, maybe 2 months ago, Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, wrote a report on basically what's been going on with the problems with the shortage of and the low pay for public attorneys and the growing concern it has as there's backlogs of actually serving justice in Wisconsin. So welcome back, Ari Brown.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be back on.
So I guess let's just start from the very top as far as putting numbers to these very critical, important positions in Wisconsin. How much do public defenders and assistant DAs as like a starting wage typically make in Wisconsin right now?
So there is a pay progression schedule that is set for a number of different state level positions that is published by the state's Division of Personnel Management. This changes about every fiscal year or so. Currently, and assistant DAs and public defenders are on the exact same schedule, and okay. It has been that way as far back as we can find in the data. So when we're referring to one of those groups here, we're referring to both of them.
Got it.
Currently, as of today, the starting annual salary for both of those two positions is $56,659. So about $57,000, about $27.24 an hour. So when you look at that compared to what lawyers make just generally, it, you know, is quite far below.
Very different.
That.
And so yes. what do, because I mean, it's obviously different in Wisconsin, but I remember like knowing some law students who in California, some of their starting pay at corporate law firms were like 180. And I don't think it's quite that high as what the median is, but the median lawyer in Wisconsin. And when you take the median lawyer's pay in Wisconsin, is that including DAs and public defenders or is that excluding them? And this is all just private practice.
That is a good question. So that data that we included in our piece comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, from something called the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics, OEWS. This is a comparison that the Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau uses. So we found it as like the most accurate way to stack up what ADAs and public defenders are making against what someone with a comparable type of job would make in the private sector. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember if it includes them or does not, but obviously the preponderance of lawyers in Wisconsin are in the private sector. Yeah. So this would be predominantly private sector, but their median pay as of 2021, which is the most recent data available, was $115,336. If you compare that to the median for ADAs and public defenders, which is slightly higher than the starting salary, that's about $74,000, but that's a $40,000 gap in the median salaries between those two positions.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
That is a lot.
Well, and especially when you consider, obviously it depends upon what law school you went to, but all of these lawyers end up with an enormous amount of school debt.
Yes. And I think that is, you know, more so than a lot of other jobs when you compare the public sector pay and benefit package to the private sector. There are all sorts of reasons why someone might take a public sector job over a private sector job, including benefits, including just kind of the sense of doing something, having pride in working in the public sector. But I think when you look at a gap in pay that is that large, especially for those individuals that all necessarily had to go through law school, that is a really, really noticeable difference, and certainly something that we just hear anecdotally is swaying people away from taking these positions and more towards moving to the private sector.
Which is probably one of the many reasons that this is causing the constitutional crisis that we were either in or could be in. And so I guess as you, with your report, as you looked at these two offices, what was kind of notable as far as the problems that they're facing or kind of the history of how we got here? And we could take them one at a time.
Yeah, so I'll start with district attorneys. And some of the data that we got for each of these two offices differs a little bit. It was just what we were able to obtain to kind of paint this picture. But to start with, so for district attorneys, the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association noted that just based on the average number of cases that their offices received around the state from 2019 to 2021, the state would need about 577 full-time prosecutors to fulfill that level of work on an annual basis. Just handling that workload and working 40-hour weeks. So okay. No overtime, just 40-hour weeks. They would need 577 full-time employees. Currently, they have about 456, and not all of those positions are filled. So we're looking at a shortage in terms of just addressing the workload in a 40-hour week of about 100 positions. That is before you account for vacancies and you account for turnover and you account for all of those other factors.
So it's basically we're over 100. Like the discrepancy between how many people are needed and what there's actually budget allocation for is already about 100 job difference. And then of the jobs that are available and budgeted for, not all of those are even filled.
Correct. Got it. That's based off of information from the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association. But yes, that's the best information that we, you know, found available to kind of get at what does the workload look like. Another thing that I think, you know, kind of the cascading effects of that are, I think the term backlog has been tossed around quite a bit. And I think that sometimes it's, you know, not exactly clear what that means. But essentially, you know, during the pandemic, the first year to year and a half or so of the pandemic, the court system slowed down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There were not a lot of in-person cases happening. And that created, you know, there are cases that need to be heard in person. So there was a backlog created. There are many cases that should have been processed during that time that for obvious reasons were not being processed. We have data on kind of how long it takes for criminal cases to be disposed or like taken care of, essentially, going back to 2013. So the median felony case in 2013 was resolved in 152 days. In 2021, that was 241 days.
Oh, wow.
For misdemeanors, it was 89 days in 2013, so just right about at that three-month mark. In 2021, it was 168 days. So really, really stark increases in just the amount of time that these cases take to be processed. Those have started coming down over the last calendar year or so, but are still well above their levels, even in 2019. And I'll also note that from 2013 to 2019, before the pandemic took effect, there were backlogs that were slowly building, obviously not to any extent from what we saw with the pandemic, mm-hmm. but those were still numbers that were increasing gradually over time.
Our guest is Ari Brown. He's a senior research associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're talking about there might actually be an agreement on paying our DAs and but those people more money. How shocking.
So is there anything else to note about the DA office?
So the one other piece of information that I think is just interesting to mention, we're only able to get data from Milwaukee County, but just in general, they have about 120 positions in their office. Over the last six full years of data that they have, so from 2017 to 2022, they had an average of about 16 separations per year, people leaving their workforce. In the beginning of the 21st century, from 2000 to 2005, the same amount of years, that was an average of 8. So that has doubled. It's a low sample size, so it's not exactly clear the extent, but just from testimony that we've heard from individuals in that office, certainly there is more turnover now than there used to be.
So then what does it look like on the flip side as far as the public defender's office?
Yeah, so there's a lot going on there as well. We have much more distinct numbers there for statewide what's going on that were provided to us from the Office of the State Public Defender. So from 2018 through 2020, there was an average of about 10 to 11% turnover each year in their workforce. That jumped up to 17.9% in 2021, and then again to 20.4% in 2022. So one out of every five individuals in the State Public Defender's Office left in 2022, which is a staggering number. Yeah, so that was one that really stood out to us. And at the same time, in each of the four previous fiscal years, the number of applications to fill those positions have declined. So that was 355 in 2018, and that has dropped to 168 in 2022. So I think that really gets at kind of the issue, and just shows you the extent to which there is a workforce challenge happening right now.
And it's interesting, like one of my best friends since childhood is a public defender in Madison. And like, she is truly one of those people who's like, this is what she is committed to, this work. She'll also complain about the pay.
I'm sure.
it's basically asking people on either side, because as like having starting wage for a DA or a public defender being the same amount, it's asking people to like you. It's like teachers almost, where it's like, well, you signed up for this. You know, you're a bleeding heart who believes in the system. So you, because of that, you should be willing to be paid less.
Yeah, how dare you care?
And so when we come back from the break, I want to first talk about like why we need to solve this for the good of all society. This is not just about paying people more money in those jobs. Why the shortage itself actually affects all of us, but then also because there was a proposed in Governor Evers' budget proposal, he had a part of that that was going to address this. And then shockingly this week, there was actually some bipartisan movement on a Republican bill that also addresses this, that I think was even a dollar more per hour than Governor Evers. And so I would love your insight, Ari, when we come back on if either of those proposals go far enough to potentially alleviate some of the problems that we're seeing. So when we come back, Ari Brown, senior researcher with Wisconsin Policy Forum, will still be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Data, mom, data. I'm all about the 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 data, about the data. I'm all about the data, mom, data. I'm all about the data, mom, data. I'm all about the data, mom, data. I'm all about the data, about the data.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Sometimes.
We're up all night to get data. We're up all night to patch plans. We're up all night for GKs. We're up all night to write grants.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madner, and we are talking to Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate with Wisconsin Policy Forum, about what's happening with our public defender's offices and our DA offices and why it's important, why you should care, I think is the next question. And so for, you know, many of us, I would say probably, I don't exactly know what the number is, but I would say the great majority of us don't necessarily interact with the criminal justice system. And so why should any of us care if we're not in the backlog and waiting for our case to be heard, or the victim of a crime waiting for that case to be heard? Why is this something that needs to be addressed because it's actually affecting our society?
Yeah, so I'll kind of break this down into the two offices. So I'll start with public defenders. It is a constitutional right to have representation regardless of your income level. You know, the way that that works in different states is different, but essentially, you know, even if you cannot afford an attorney to represent you in court, you are constitutionally allowed to have one, and that is the job of public defenders. When those individuals are not compensated requisite to what some of their peers make in the private sector, and you don't have those positions filled, you are, you know, treating individuals who can't afford attorneys differently than you are treating individuals who can afford attorneys. And so I think that that is something that really stands out. You know, we can never say when any of us are going to be in dire financial straits. And I think it is reassuring to know that we live in a country where you are afforded a constitutional right to legal representation. On the other side, you know, I think that there is a lot of conversation over the last couple of years about crime and public safety. And really, when you slow down the level to which prosecutors can handle cases, criminal cases that are coming into their offices, you know, there are, you know, it really just gums up the whole system. And you have, you know, individuals who might be aware that that criminal cases are not being prosecuted in the way that they used to be, and you know, might get away with certain crimes in a way that they might not have been able to in the past. You know, obviously, the extent to which that's happening is hard to say, but you really do need a functional prosecutorial system in order for, you know, it's just a key facet of the public safety conversation in a broad sense. So to have a workforce there that is not fully functional creates these backlogs. And for individuals who have a criminal case, they're spending longer and longer amounts of time having that case processed, potentially sitting in some sort of local jail or state prison, which is, you know, something that you don't want to have happen. It's just a bad policy outcome.
So at least there's some movement, it sounds like, on addressing this problem. And so I know we don't have a ton of time left, but as far as kind of outlining or high level, talk about what has been introduced in the legislature, how that differs from what Ever said, and do either of these stand a chance to actually solve, or at least start to solve, this problem?
So to start with the proposals, both Governor Evers and the Republican legislature have seem to be on board with pay increases. So in the governor's budget proposal for both of these offices, there's a new starting salary of $35 an hour. The Republican legislature's proposal raised that to $36 an hour. But ultimately, we're talking about a difference of about about $2,000 a year. So the governor's proposal would be $72,800 a year versus the Republican proposal would be $74,880, but much more in line with what you might see in the private sector. So that seems, there seems to be a good amount of bipartisan agreement on that one. I, you know, would be surprised to not see this get through to some extent. Both Governor Evers and the Republican proposal add some prosecutorial positions. It obviously differs on all the details of that, but there are a couple of positions that are added. I think the other really big one that comes into play on the public defender side, and something that is that was included in the governor's bill and is also included in the Republican proposal, there are private sector attorneys who will take on public defender work, either when workloads are too large or when there's a conflict of interest. They're compensated at a flat rate that is set by the state of Wisconsin. For a while, it was $40 an hour, which for a while was the lowest rate in the country. That was raised to $70 an hour in 2020, which was not the lowest, but still kind of towards the bottom. The governor pitched a $100 an hour set hourly rate there, and the Republicans have included it in their proposal. So that is also something that we're likely to see, and that can really help to alleviate some of that backlog on the public defender side. In terms of how this will impact things, I think that's going to be the real question for policymakers to pay attention to going forward. You've seen a lot of these conversations happen anecdotally. You hear about DA offices where you have one or two individuals leave, and that's like 50% of the prosecutorial power of that entire county. And that can be a real problem. And I think you've heard salary kind of at the forefront of this conversation. So this kind of pretty stark salary raise is something that you would hope would bring people back, or at least bring people to apply to these jobs, maybe not necessarily keep them around for extended periods of time, but at least bring in those new individuals with pay rates that are much closer to what you see in the private sector. If that doesn't happen, I think it's going to be on those same policymakers to go back and talk to the DAs and public defenders around the state and say, you know, we raised pay. That doesn't seem to be bringing people back. Why aren't more people applying for these jobs? But I think, you know, there seems to be a lot of bipartisan agreement, which I know in this state is not something we are used to.
We got to celebrate when it happens, man.
This seems, you know, this is one of the things in the budget that I think we might actually see some real movement on, which is pretty exciting.
That is exciting because this is a big deal. And so thank you for covering it. Thank you for breaking it down for us, Ari. Excited to have you back on whatever next project you report on and publish. And so it's always fun to have you here.
Always fun being here. Thanks for having me back.
All right. When we come back, we will be talking to federal prosecutor Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, who is an expert on congressionally run investigations, to talk about all these investigations that are happening on in D.C. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
You've decided to expand your family with a furry friend, so what's next? Do you have enough space? What are the right foods? Get the answers to these questions and more at WFHR's Petpalooza on the Southwood County Humane Society grounds, June 11th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Local pet experts will be on hand to answer all your questions, and the Humane Society will be open to discuss the adoption process. All this plus live music, food trucks, and food and direct sales vendors. It's a real petcation, June 11th from 10 to 4 for WFHR's Petpalooza.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Funtussle has been your trusted rural internet provider since 2003. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Funtussle brings high-speed internet where others can't or won't. At an honest price, without any contracts or data caps, Funtussle has the plan that's right for you. Get connected with Funtussle today for internet, cellular, and entertainment by calling 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies expected tonight with lows around 37. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lots of sunshine tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 68. Lows dip down to about 37 tomorrow night. Low 70s Friday, turning warmer on Saturday with highs in the mid 70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 61.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And there's a lot of investigations happening. There is Trump investigations. There are Hunter Biden investigations. There's John Durham's investigation that just came back. And
FBIs
and whistleblowers. And there is a lot of moving parts for the general public to have an opinion on, differentiate. And it gets complicated when it's criminal investigations, but there's political matters. And so I'm very excited to talk to one of the authors and potentially the other author. We'll see if she can still join us. But joining us right now is Christy Parker, who is a former federal prosecutor and currently counsel at Protect Democracy, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit, anti-authoritarian group. And given kind of the complicated politics of what's been going on, they published a report that details the proper scope of criminal prosecutions and congressional oversight, and kind of tease up what is the appropriate and what's appropriate and what's an abuse of power. And so I am so excited to have you here. Thanks for joining us, Christy.
Thank you for having me. And I'm really pumped by the Law and Order music.
That was we do what we can to, you know, we try to lighten things up as far as when it comes to very complicated and important topics. And so I guess at the very beginning and high level of this, how do you, and actually, let me introduce her as well. Ann Tindall just joined, and she is also counsel at Protect Democracy and is an expert on congressionally run investigations. And so, Ann, I was just about to ask kind of how does the average person look at the news and not, one, I guess on one side, get jaded and just call all of this politically motivated versus what is serious and also needs attention and it needs a criminal investigation?
Well, so it is very easy in the climate that we live in, I think, for people to just throw up their hands and say that there's so much chaos going on, everything must be political. You know, what happens must be dictated by whoever's in charge. And one of the reasons we exist as an organization and one of the reasons that we wrote this report is to really try to help people focus on the fact that we are a democratic society governed by rules and laws, and we do have institutions that have rules around how they're supposed to function, and they do function every day. And there are actually ways that you can tell whether they're doing the right thing or not doing the right thing. And I think one of the key things we wanted to focus people on is that it's actually not aberrational, but normal and something we should all hope for. The idea that we can hold our political leaders accountable if they have done things that warrant charging them, investigating or charging them with crimes, because in a democratic society, no one is supposed to be above the law. So hopefully just by, you know, focusing on those rules, those institutions, honing in on what they're supposed to do, people can cut through all that noise and make clear assessments of what's going on.
Anne, do you have anything to add?
Sure. I mean, I think especially with respect to congressional investigations, it is easy to understand why people look at Jim Jordan throwing bombshells and think this is all a political mess. But the fact of the matter is Congress's power of oversight is an absolutely essential check on abuse of power. And we don't want to let the fact that some members may not make the best use of it take away from the fact that we need to have this sort of tool in our constitutional toolbox. Now, when you have members prejudging the results of an investigation or running right to public testimony instead of trying to get to the bottom of something, you may have a sign that this is not the best way to deploy congressional resources. But I think to suggest that to cast away as just political noise, Congress exercising its power to check other branches and other parts of the government sort of misunderstands its role in all of this.
Yeah. So you're saying we shouldn't just infer when there's no evidence, we shouldn't just infer that they're, you gotta figure it out. You gotta interpret.
That's one of the basic tenets. And, you know, I mean, good congressional investigations are designed to understand things and achieve a goal, not to, you know, Congress isn't a prosecutor. They're not there to name and shame. They are there to pass laws that make the country function better. If that's not what they're up to, then, you know, that's a good sign. They're maybe not using that power appropriately.
I think there might be some who like the whole name and shame thing. I just have a feeling for some reason.
So I guess Have these things always been this political? Because even this week we talked about it. It's like, what has more political spin right now? Like Comer's investigation that is really, like, he lost whistleblowers, Durham's findings that weren't that sticky. But as far as, like, how political this all seems, is this just part of the symptom of the era we live in of partisan politics in the 24-hour news cycle?
I think historians would probably say, if you really dug into the way some of our politics worked throughout our history, that, you know, that there never really was a time, you know, there never really was some halcyon days of, you know, comedy all around. But I do think we live in an era now where it's just far easier to send your political messaging around the world. We have, you know, we have social media, you know, we just have means of doing that we never had before. And frankly, we do have now some politicians who have really, you know, pushed the envelope in terms of the way they talk about things and the way that they present themselves. I mean, when you have somebody like Donald Trump, who is, you know, who openly talks about using his government powers to exact retribution on people or to further his own political aims or to protect himself and his friends, you know, that's someone who's openly talking about doing things that are not what we do in a democratic form of government. Mm-hmm. So while we may have had people in the past who weren't great at living out the, you know, the tenets of a democracy, he truly is breaking new ground in being so willing to openly talk about what he intends to do and the departure he intends to make from the society we have thought ourselves to live in all this time.
If you are just joining us, our guests are Christy Parker, a former federal prosecutor, currently counsel at Protect Democracy, and Ann Tindall is also counsel at Protect Democracy and an expert on congressionally run investigations.
So the report that you guys published also focuses on the importance of independent law enforcement institutions and investigative bodies. So why is that so important, and how can we kind of, how can we tell if those institutions are functioning the way they should, like as the general public looks on and reads the news?
So I'll start with law enforcement, okay. And then, you know, Anne, I think, can follow up with Congress. But the law enforcement, the government's law enforcement powers are some of, if not the most potent powers that it has. If you have a person in charge of the government who seeks to use those powers as a weapon against enemies or as a weapon to promote friends, then you really have something that doesn't comport with what we think of as a democracy. So that is why it has always been so important. And certainly since, you know, post-Watergate, when we saw the abuses of that era, why it is so important to create rules, norms, and guardrails around our law enforcement institutions to make sure that they are acting in a nonpartisan way that is about law enforcement and not, again, about the political interests of the person in charge. So, you know, the way that you can tell whether they're operating in the right way is whether they're following those, you know, laws, rules, and policies. So we've got a constitution. We have the laws that the Department of Justice, for instance, is supposed to enforce. And then we also have a set of guardrails around, you know, keeping a division between the White House and the Justice Department mm-hmm. in terms of specific law enforcement matters. So you're not supposed to see the President of the United States routinely commenting on specific Department of Justice investigations or calling for specific people to be prosecuted or directing on Twitter his attorney general, you know, to do certain things. And there are actually rules that our various administrations have put in place to govern communications between the White House and the Justice Department to keep them separate. And the Justice Department also has rules that governs how it brings prosecutions, and it has rules about when it comments on cases. So if you see the Attorney General out commenting about how people are guilty of crimes before they've been prosecuted, you know, that's a way of knowing that things aren't really going well.
Yeah.
And we may have seen something like that in recent years. But I know Anne's got some things to say about how, you know, how Congress is supposed to behave as well.
Sure. I mean, Congress has vast power to investigate, but it is not unbound. It has to be tied to legislation or oversight of the funds that has appropriated. And importantly, Congress is not a prosecutive body. It has the power of investigation to impeach certain officials, and beyond that, any effort to intrude on or usurp prosecutorial power is a violation of the separation of powers, and historically has been guarded against by both Congress and the executive branch through an accommodations process of, you know, compromise and coordination and conversation, a lot of which broke down over the last decade, and particularly broke down when Donald Trump told Congress to, you know, here's the back of my hand. I'm not going to give you anything you ask for. Mm-hmm. And that sort of escalation to, you know, no interest in what the other branch of government is trying to do and understand. You know, it's dangerous on both when it comes from the president and when it comes from Congress.
And so I'm debating because what I really want to get to next, so I think I'm going to keep you guys through the break because I think it's a bigger conversation than we can have in the next 3 minutes, is also because I think that there's a difference between, you both are experts, right? Federal prosecutor, expert in congressional run investigations. And there is a big gap between the expertise that you both have and the work that you've done versus the layperson sitting at home watching CNN, right? And it seems like the conduit between those two things becomes journalists and the media. And so when we come back from this break, like, I would love to talk a little bit more about the role of journalism, like journalists, and how they're breaking this down. Because I think in the last, there was a CNN poll that indicated that 76% of Americans say politics played at least some role in the decision to indict Trump. And so I would love to have a little bit more conversation about that, like the gap between what's actually happening and what, like, the perception becomes by from the people, like, sitting at home just consuming the news. And so we will talk about that when we come back from our next break. But we are talking to Christy Parker, who is a former federal prosecutor and currently counsel at Protect Democracy, and also Ann Tindall, who is counsel at Protect Democracy and an expert on congressionally run investigations. And we were talking about their new report, kind of trying to break down everything that's happening with Trump and Hunter Biden. And maybe we'll even get to what could actually happen. What would it actually mean if we prosecuted Donald Trump? All right. Well, we'll come back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
With hot.
As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we were talking to Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, who are two of the authors of a new Protect Democracy report called Investigating and Prosecuting Political Leaders in a Democracy, How to Assess the Difference Between the Rule of Law and Abuses of Power. And we ended the last segment kind of teeing up, because I read this report and it's fascinating and it's really helpful. Not everyone's going to read this. You know, the average person's not going to read this. And the gap between people who work, live, and breathe in upholding the law, and especially in D.C. and in our politics. And so you both are experts. And the gap between that and the person at home consuming the news. And so what role does the media and journalists have to play in, like, creating helpful versus unhelpful narratives when it comes, because so much of this is like our belief in democracy and the democracy is working. It's kind of like if it's a little like Santa Claus to a certain extent, right? It's like that we have to believe in it to also continue to believe that it's working. And so what have you guys found as far as what is helpful with media coverage versus what is unhelpful, and or even how can they do better? How could we do better?
Well, so one of the things I often find myself wishing is that more people could participate in the process, not by committing crimes and getting indicted, but by, you know, serving on grand juries or serving on juries, because I have found over the course of my career that when people do that, they really get a sense not only of how the system works, but they see the role that they play in it as citizens and as jurors, and they see how the rules are laid out and all of those sorts of things. But since everybody can't do that, that really is why journalists are so incredibly important, not just in providing information, but in making sure that our democracy can function by being kind of the people in the room who can help the people who aren't there understand how things are supposed to work. So yeah. I think journalists just play a really critical role, not just in amplifying the messages that the two sides of the political aisle are throwing at each other, but really on zeroing in on, okay, there's a criminal investigation going on here. What are the laws that we're dealing with here? What do we know about that's in the public record about the evidence? What do we know about whether other people who aren't political leaders have been, who've done things like this? What do we know about how they have been treated? Let's make a comparison and make sure everybody's being treated the same. You know, what do we know about the way the Justice Department or the DA's office is behaving? And what can we tell people about whether or not they're following their own practices or whether they're deviating from those practices? So it's not just being stenographers and reporting, you know, what the various interested parties say, but it's really going in and explaining to people, this is the process. This is how it's supposed to work. These are the people who are following the process. These are the people who aren't. And here are the ways in which they are or they aren't. And I think that is really helpful in helping people cut through all that noise and seeing whether is it standard for the New York DA's office to bring a charge like the one that they brought against, you know, Donald Trump. Have they charged other people with that? Does the indictment that they brought look like ones that they brought before? You know, are we talking to people who've worked in the DA's office who can tell us about that? That's really the role that journalists play. And I think, again, it's not just, you know, reporting the news. It really is being an actor in our democracy.
I think all of that's right. And I just want to add one small point, which is it's also important that journalists not confuse the political implications of a particular investigation with a politicized investigation. Because we believe that no one is above the law, that means we also are from time to time going to see indictments or investigations of political actors. And of course, that has an impact on their political future and on our politics. That does not mean that the investigation itself is improperly politically motivated. And that is something I see journalists misconstrue from time to time.
And it was all I could think of, because the one that I didn't even throw out yet, we didn't even talk about George Santos. And that's a whole other investigation.
Which is a doozy.
It's a whole doozy in and of itself. But
who is George Santos?
That's the eternal question that some documentarian 15 years from now will probably actually uncover, and it will win an Oscar. But beyond all of these other investigations, obviously the big one, and there's many, of Donald Trump. And so I guess to kind of end on this note, what would prosecuting a former president mean for our democracy, in at least in your two's opinion?
I think based on what we've seen of his conduct and the evidence that relates to the various laws that he may have violated, like I think we all saw on January 6th and before that this is not a hidden thing. You know, he tried to overturn a free and fair election, and he mobilized a mob in order to, you know, just disrupt the process of finalizing that. So I think what it would mean for our democracy to actually bring him to a point where he is placed before the law and, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty like anybody else, but we go through the process that any other person who did those things and hundreds of other people who did those things have had to go through, that will actually be a moment in which we will see, you know, the words on a piece of paper that are in our Constitution, you know, the words that we say about this being a rule of law society, really coming to fruition. And we'll see how it all turns out. I mean, there's a process, and, you know, he would have a right to defend himself in that process. But I think it would, the real question we should ask is what it would mean for our democracy if, knowing all of what we know, we can't put that process into the works, and we can't put him, you know, before the law and try to hold him accountable, because I think that is what would really say the most about our democracy, and it wouldn't be a good thing.
He might be looking for a couple lawyers too. I'm just throwing it out there. It seems like he has trouble keeping them employed.
I don't know. Tapioca's doing okay.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, tapioca.
It's just, that's a joke. But thank you so much. Is there anything else you would like to add or end on in the last minute that we have? I'll take that as a
I think just thank you for having us, and thank you for playing the Law and Order music.
Well, thank you, Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, so much. This is, like, thank you for the report. We will certainly add this to our show notes for today, because it is super interesting, and it's important to actually try to break through the noise, like you said. And so thank you for spending time with us. Thank you for writing this report. And thank you for your work.
Thank you.
All right. Well, when we come back, Mike Clemens will be here to talk about at Civic Media. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
When times get dark, we can't see the help that's all around us. Let 211 be your guiding light for help with food, healthcare, and other resources.
211, how can I help you?
Call 211 or visit 211.org. 211, get connected, get help.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists, in their own words. If you're talking, they
will hear you. We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them, with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. So talk, baby.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. It's been a